Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
£1 million.
Hello everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Australian Survivor. I'm your host Shannon Gus, here to talk about All Stars once again, to do another deep dive, probably our final deep dive at least for now, with a great contestant, someone who actually had almost got the record for most consecutive days, but also is otherwise a fan favorite from the last two seasons of Australian Survivor. It is the great Dirty Harry Hills. Harry, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for that fantastic intro.
Yeah, I'm sorry you couldn't get the consecutive days, you know, record.
I know. That whole thing was weird because I didn't even think about it. And then I'm pretty sure Dave didn't actually care about it. He just wanted, like, a little excuse to, like, sort of just say, let's just get rid of him now.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that's true. But, like, it really did become quite a thing in the TV product. And then it was in Final Tribal Council. It was like, I never want to hear the words consecutive and Dave consecutively again.
It was weird because it's like I don't even consider it that much of a record, but it is cool. Like, it is a cool thing, but it's a weird thing to claim.
Yeah, it was a lot. Well, Harry, I know that we wanted to do a little bit of a different structure for this deep dive. You know, we're gonna like hit on we did a great X interview, but we're gonna hit on some points of your game, some parts of the preseason prep and everything like that. We got amazing questions from the listeners as well, and I know we really wanted to get into the jury because as someone who watched a lot of the game from the jury and has been on a jury twice in two quite different spots, I'm really keen to get your insights on that.
Yeah, that's what I'm probably most excited to talk about is the jury, because I think it's quite relevant to All Stars.
Yeah, I mean, I think that All Stars, like, Dave ended up being in the final two, and that felt like a very obvious jury decision. We'll talk about it, but I feel like the whole time there were really interesting jury decisions. You know, if it had gone a different way, if it was Sean and Mo, or if Tarzan had made it there, or a Vakama member had made it there, like, I think we were debating these things that never panned out. So I'm interested to kind of hear a bit about those, like, different aspects of it.
Yeah, and those are definitely interesting. But even just Dave versus Sean in of itself is, like, a very interesting look, because it isn't as simple as, oh, Dave just played better. It's Dave actually knowing exactly what to do with the jury. So I'd be very keen to talk about that more.
Yeah, definitely. And hopefully if some of our listeners go on the show again and have the luxury of talking to a jury, maybe that'll be helpful, because you definitely got the jury thing sorted. You voted for two winners now within like the last year. So if people want to know how to get
I'm
a
making
juror
people
on
rich.
Side,
I'm making people rich. I can make you rich as well if you go on the show.
Yeah, unfortunately, it was like a 9-0 and 8-1 vote. You weren't the deciding vote, but you have technically given out like $1 million in the last year.
That's a weird thing to think about.
Yeah, so much power in your hands. Well, I want to get to before the season started. We did briefly touch on the X interview, but you had a very unique experience of going out back-to-back, you know, of lasting 49 days in your first season, no less. No time to really recover at Jury Villa, come back, get engaged, which you talked about on your last deep dive, and go back on Survivor. So When were you asked, was this something you were weighing up, or was it something you immediately knew that you were going to do?
So to paint a picture, I get voted out at about 4 a.m. The first time, and then didn't sleep. Midday the next day, the head producer has a chat with me and asks me if I want to play All Stars. And to be honest, it was like a bit of a shock, because I thought I was just there to like talk through what I wanted to say at Final Tribal. And so I told her straight up that I need to think about it. Like, I didn't say yes straight away. And for me, I'd sort of already had the experience. So I did actually want to talk with other people before saying yes. So it sort of went like, I did ask Jordan, my partner, if like it would be okay if I played again. And I was genuinely serious that I wouldn't play if she said no. But we ended up sort of working it out and end up having this 6-week period where I have to try and get myself ready again, which is definitely not enough. And I sort of mentioned that in my exit, that it's a really bad idea to play back to back. It's just stupid. And like, for me to do it, like going 49 days is crazy, but also for other people. I mean, you look at Abby, you look at Daisy, John went far as well. And so it's just crazy to even contemplate doing that. Like, physically you can get like a little bit back, but mentally, like, there's no way you can get your head completely right in 6 weeks.
Yeah. So where was your head, like, on the verge of this? You obviously know that you've just come third, like, almost as far as you can go in the game. Where was your head at that point?
Well, I think mentally I just never really got back in the same, like, real, I guess, the real aggressive headspace that I had the first time playing. Like, the first time going into it, I was like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to push really hard. And I sort of did that for my first half. Second half, I still pushed hard, but in a different way. Like, it was like really aggressive social gameplay and trying to like slowly manipulate people over days. And sort of going in the second time, I just didn't have that motivation. So I guess it definitely affected how well I played. Like, I definitely don't think I played as well. But on top of that, I think, yeah, there was just a bit of cruise mode, I guess, because there just wasn't that vibe, that like excitement and motivation.
What about the fact that you'd gone on, you played this whole season of the game, you're on Survivor for the first time, and then you guys get taken out midway through season 4. So there's like a few things to that. Like, you're missing the second half of your season in terms of like being able to kind of analyze that second half, just watch yourself on TV. But the rest of the cast is also, you know, missing that second half. And I feel like you became a more workable player in the second half of the game. Like, they're going out right after all the pre-merge shenanigans. That's what they're seeing of your game. So like, how did both of those things affect you?
Yeah, and that kind of sucked in a lot of ways. Like, firstly, it kind of sucked like not being able to watch your own season, especially like when I made it far and kind of wanted to like enjoy that with like family and friends and stuff, and like wasn't able to. So that, I mean, it kind of sucks, but as well, like, you get to play again. So that wasn't so bad. But going in day one and having all these people having watched me lie about a fake child, lie about my job, play two idols, and then pretty much like soon after that, we left. And it was just like, it was not good, because we had to explain our final positions before we even started the game. Like, we had to like reveal them before the first challenge. And I was just like, yeah, I came third. And like, you could see sort of like a little bit of like things ticking over where people were like, all right, well, Harry's going home.
Mm. Yeah, I feel like that's not good to be like the one returning and they don't know where any of you have come potentially, and you did the best.
Well, yeah, like to be the sort of top place person from the most recent season. And on top of that, to like, it was so obvious how aggressive and cutthroat I was in the first half. And for them to just see that and not see the second half, where I actually became friends with people and like I definitely had a lot more friendly moments at tribal council and that sort of thing, rather than just straight up like aggressive sort of telling people off gameplay.
Yeah, and you missed the exit interview as well, so you missed a lot in that second half of your first season because you were actually playing.
And definitely.
How did that affect your relationship with the other people from season four? Like, you've had that contender thing with John, with Daisy. You've played a long time and worked with Abby. David is the kind of player you've worked with for, you know, very few days, even though you've played two seasons together. So how did those relationships kind of move forward into your next season?
I guess, like, I always have to count myself as lucky sort of going into the next one because they put me on a beach with Abby and John, who are two people that I never betrayed. Like, John got voted out by the champions and Abby got sort of voted out by Luke and Pia. So those were two people that I'd never betrayed and two people that I really like and who I hope like me. So that was actually quite good. I have, like, good relationships with all the Season 4 people that went to All Stars. So I wasn't necessarily, like, worried about that. It was more that we hadn't had a chance to be, like, proper friends the way that other people are proper friends. Like, we sort of went out there and it became quite apparent for some of the decision making in All Stars that, like, it sort of was based on friendships. And it's like, you can't really help that. There's four seasons. People are going to be real life friends, but it does affect things when other people have that and I don't.
Yeah. Did you know anyone from any of the other seasons? Because you hadn't been in the community for that long, which is another, you know, knock against where you were at that time.
No, I didn't know anyone properly. There'd been a couple of people that had messaged me to, like, say that, like, to say hi. Like, whether that was, like, sort of, like, they were sort of pre-gaming or whether they were genuinely just being nice, is sort of, I don't know. I'm hoping they were just being nice. But it wasn't very many. And it was really quite brief. So I didn't really get a chance to talk with anyone, but I think that was kind of a positive as well because you could actually get to know them out there and it was a bit more interesting actually being able to socialize with people you'd never talk to.
Yeah. Were you able to prepare in some way, you know, going within 6 weeks of going back out there?
Nah. I was just like, I was so lazy with, like, preparation. So I basically, like, I was trying to do things physically. So, like, obviously trying to eat a lot, like, get all your exercising back in, but, like, mentally, I basically did nothing. Like, I wasn't going to watch any of the older seasons. I wasn't going to double check whether people were friends or whatever. Like, I didn't see any point. Like, I figure, like, we're the fresh people anyway. Like, the positives that we bring to the game is that we're, like, the fresh meat. Like, people are going to be interested in socializing with us anyway. So there's no point over, like putting too much work in before the season, or at least, like, in my opinion, there wasn't, like, any value to that.
Yeah, I mean, and also, so you're only back for 6 weeks. You get engaged during that time. Also, you're on TV for, like, five of those weeks as well, which, like, that's not nothing. You know, the show's on three times a week. Like, I know that, I mean, it takes over my life anyway, and I'm not on the show. So for you to be watching that and then thinking about how you're going to go out, like, I don't know how you would have had time for anything.
No, and you kind of don't. Like, I was kind of going, like, pretty chill. Like, the good thing about, like, going in the second time is you kind of, like, you see what wins, but more so you see how you don't lose. And so going in the second time, it was quite easy to, like, be in cruise control and just easily sort of get through the votes. Like, obviously I pick up some votes at the very start. But, like, literally, if you're pretty good at challenges, like, just average, and you're handy to have around and nice, like, you're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree that that's probably a bit of a golden rule. You know, we're going to get into, like, some of those high points of the game. But before I do that, going out there, you'd come third. That's very good. What were you trying to achieve or get out of All Stars, considering you had so many successes in the game, ticked so much off the bucket list, found idols, like, you know, done so much? Was there anything that you went into All Stars being like, this will be for me a failure and this will be for me a success?
Yes, and they did. They did, like, literally ask us that before we started. They're like, what would you consider a failure? What is a pass? And I said that if I got voted out first, I would consider that a pass, because that just means that I'm too much of a threat to like keep around. So that's fine. But I said, if I get voted out in between second and the merge, that's a fail. But if I get past the merge, that's a pass.
Okay. So past the merge is good.
Yeah. So if I get voted out first, or if I get past the merge, then I considered that a pass, because I thought that like I had the skills to at least make that happen.
Yeah, well, I mean, but the thing that's really interesting about Australian Survivors is no pre-jury trip. So had you got voted out pre-merge, you would have gone back to your life having been away for so long. But you stay on the jury, so you've done all 50 days, like you've been out there both times. So was there any part of you being like, look, if I go out pre-merge, at least I can go chill. Like, I know Nick had a little bit of that. Or were you just like, give me the 50 days?
Yeah, there's always a part of you that's like seeing the positives in everything. I definitely looked at it like it was getting to like day 20 something. And I think those were some of the hardest days where I was just like, you know what? Like if I just went home, like it wouldn't actually be like bad at all.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, hard not to think just like, you know, I could be at home right now. And then, you know, you get on the jury and it's nice to be in Jury Villa. But when you've spent so much time away from home and your loved ones, you know, you'd probably rather be somewhere else.
Yeah, because by that point, it had been 3 out of 5 months I'd been away, and then it ends up being 4 out of 6 months that you're in Fiji. So, like, it's a huge amount.
Yeah, you're basically a Fiji citizen for 2019.
Pretty much.
You were there so long. Well, to get on the beach, we've spoken to two of the other rascals, but we've got the whole – we've now completed the whole rascals trifecta, which is fun for the deep dive. How did this come together in a way that was, like, such a positive alliance so early?
I think we were just fans of each other, really. Like, I knew that I was a fan of Nick, and it was actually really funny because I was a fan of him, but we're so different in reality. Like, a lot of people sort of put me in the exact same category as him, but I'm not. Like, he's sort of like a much smaller guy. He thinks a lot more, and he's a lot better at puzzles. And it's like, I'm the opposite in all of those categories. Like, I suck at puzzles. Like, I'm much more physical and I try to keep things chill. But it's really funny because day one, JLP's asking us questions on the mat and he's like, Harry, who do you want to work with? I'm just like, I want to work with Nick. And I just like called him out in front of everyone just saying that we were going to work together. And that's the sort of thing where he would just like I'm sure he was just losing it, but I just thought it was funny because I was just like, well, I'm going to be honest. Like, why even bother hiding it?
I think that kills him to this day. So, yeah.
It's just funny because it's like that's sort of how like I play. Like I don't actually care if people know certain details of like what I'm doing. Like if you get to the beach and you're hanging out all the time anyway, like why bother hiding it before that? And that's what I was intending on straight away. Like I knew who I wanted to work with and it was just the people I was fans of. And so Nick's on the same beach as me. Shawnee's on the same beach as me. And the goal for me was to have a side alliance and a regular alliance. And my, like, I go into day one thinking Shawnee and Nick will be my side alliance and Abby and John will be my alliance. And then it ended up very, very quickly, like within 48 hours flipping. And then Nick and Shawnee were definitely like my number ones.
Yeah. And is that just because of like the chemistry of the alliance?
Yeah, you just like you have a natural rapport with some people and like we definitely got along very well. Like I always consider myself a little bit of a like individual or loner in Survivor. Like so like Nick and Shawnee were definitely like closer when we were on Makuta Beach than I was. So I definitely felt like the third out of the three, but like that still worked very well for me. And we did have like a natural chemistry that I could clearly see was better than Abby and John.
Yeah. You worked really interestingly into the dynamics because from what we've seen, there was like a bit of an athlete thing, but as you said, you had your season four connections. Where did you see the dynamics and where you fit into them?
Well, that's the thing that I guess I was just mentioning was like, I see myself as much more versatile than the typical strategist.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like you have your Lee, you have John and Abby and Lydia, and I can talk sport. Like I love sport. Like I can talk football all day. So Like, I didn't see myself as being too different. And let's say there's a hypothetical there where, like, Shawnee isn't there, Nick isn't there. I would have fit very well into that alliance. You've obviously got the season four thing. Me, John, and Abby had never betrayed each other. So there was, like, just a good thing going there. And basically, to sort of summarize things, like, things were actually going very well up until the point where our interests didn't align anymore. And I have to give credit to Abby especially, because she was very, very good at making it seem like I was still a priority to her over keeping, like, Zach or Sean.
Yeah, and what point was that with your interest? Because I know that for the pre-swap Makuta, like, Henry is pretty much, like, the name in, like, the word cloud. That was a lot of the drama. So was it around Henry?
All right. Well, I'll try and get through this semi-quickly. But basically, you had a few factions. You had sort of Sean, Lydia, Abby. You had John and Lee. You had me, Nick, and Shawnee. Then you had Zach, Michelle, and Henry. Who were probably, like, the weakest faction in terms of, like, sticking together, but they were still a faction. And basically, the group as a whole decided that we wanted to get rid of the Henry, Michelle, Zach faction. But what the Rascals weren't really aware of was the fact that Lydia, Sean, Abby, John, Lee were forming an alliance, and that they were going to essentially start cutting into the Rascals once they'd sort of dealt the damage with Henry and Michelle. It's a weird thing, because if you're going towards a swap, you really don't want to piss anyone off. And so everyone was kind of delaying, like, going after each other as long as possible. Like, it's so much easier to just pick off some of the random side people. But then it did get to the point where there was Henry versus Shawnee, and I got lied to by Lee and John, which is a game, that's fair, but that was the point where we realized that they actually just didn't care about the Rascals.
Yeah, I wish that they had represented that to us, like, as those voting blocks, because I think it's just, like, more interesting than the narrative we got. Obviously, like, that seems more fluid, so it would have been more interesting.
Well, I guess, like, it was just, like, I feel like they all deserve credit. Like, Abby, Lydia, Sean, John, and Lee did an amazing job of getting to the top and hiding the fact that they were on top for as long as they did. Because we were trying to sketch that out. Like, there was a vote where we voted Michelle out, and me and Nick on purpose got ourselves to be Michelle votes, so that if we both flipped, we could have voted Sean out, we could have voted Henry out. And the whole way up until the tribal, me and Nick discussed whether we wanted to do anything, whether we wanted to flip and just take out someone that we wanted. Sean obviously put in a lot of work after they tried to vote for me and try and, like, put all the heat on Henry. And that was funny, because that's one of the sort of things where everyone's, like, the hero of their own story. And, like, so she put in a lot of work, that's true, to sort of get the heat on Henry. But there was definitely heat on her as well. And for a long time, the group were basically deliberating on whether we got rid of Sean or whether we got rid of Michelle.
The group being the Rascals or, like, the larger group?
Like, everyone was basically deliberating on it. And I think the only reason some people leaned towards getting rid of Michelle was because Abby was in so close with Sean and Lydia.
Right. Yeah, because you get votes at that first tribal council. Yeah, and as you said, like, that would have been good, because it would have painted you as a threat if you had gone in that way. But, you know, to get votes and come back to the beach from that first tribal council, where's your thought process then?
I didn't really care. Nick was, like, freaking out before the first tribal, and he's like, "Harry, like, you're getting votes. Oh my god, this is so bad." I'm like, "Nick, is it going to be the most votes?" And he's like, "Oh, probably not. Like, I don't think they have the votes to get you out." I'm like, "I don't care then. Like, a couple of votes doesn't matter. Like, it only matters if you get the most votes." And I'd been watching Shane for literally like 48 hours straight. She definitely didn't have an idol, like, and you could tell. I didn't have any idea about the Henry stuff, but I did know about like Shane searching nonstop, and it was quite clear she didn't have one. So I was pretty chill about that. And then like coming back, like some people have voted for you. So there was three total, one's gone, and you've got Sean and Henry there. To be honest, like I spent season four with plenty of people voting for me, and I ended up going with them towards the end of the game. I mean, you look at the alliance of me, Abby, Luke, and Baden in season four. I'd voted for every single one of them, and two out of the three had voted for me before. And we ended up going from final eight down to like final five. And it was like the crucial thing that got the four of us further. So I didn't really care about whether someone's voted for me or not. I think the thing that really killed it for Henry was he was quite rigid in terms of not wanting to hear other people's sort of thought processes. And if he had have been, we probably would have tried to make an alliance with him and Michelle.
Yeah. Do you look back at that with any regret? Like, because as you've said, like the athletes were better at hiding maybe their connections to each other than you had known. And you had a lot of power, especially at that Michelle vote. And I think that's the kind of thing I spoke about with Nick. That's the kind of thing we've looked back on of like, you guys could have had more power, but maybe with a more combustible group. And again, maybe not with perfect information, but if you had made a different decision there, obviously the game would be very different and Sean would have gone home instead of to the final two. So looking back on that, is anything you would do differently with different information?
It's hard to like really regret it. If you like have these like strong feelings towards moments like that, you're just going to like destroy your own brain. Like you can't really get yourself like down in the dumps about that. Like the fact was, the Abby, Sean, Lydia sort of group definitely like tricked us into thinking things were more fluid than they were. So credit to them. I do wish I could have seen where things went, because I think it would have been definitely more fun if we had have kept Michelle and kept Henry, because they were both the sort of players that would play more fluidly.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been like a wild ride. As someone who has played a really big game, who made up a child, who's done some, like, I think objectively pretty crazy things with the Oscar stuff, etc.
Yeah.
What's your take on what Henry was doing? I mean, I know there was a lot of information coming out about the idol and Matt Rogers, and then there was a fake idol. You've said he was, you know, too rigid, and I get that. But just looking at it as a big game player, someone who could play probably both sides of the coin, what is your take on that game?
It's incredible TV. I think it was literally perfect. The only thing he needed to do was pull in more people and be like, hey, you want to have some fun? And like, to me, it was just weird because like he had the perfect group of people to do it with. Like he already knows Nick, like they've already like known each other. Me and Shawnee are two people that are like down to do crazy things, and we offer him a spot, and he didn't want it because he wanted to get rid of me. And that was just a weird thing for me, because it's like I wanted to do crazy things, like him giving the idol to Matt Rogers. I was fully in support of that, like doing other crazy stuff, fully in support of that. I think if you want to make crazy moves happen, definitely do it. For anyone that's going on Survivor, definitely make crazy things happen, but have people on your side at the same time, because that's something he didn't do.
Yeah, why was he so set on you? Because, yeah, if the first vote is like, hey, we're going to do some crazy stuff, Shane Gould will come along, she's clearly a little crazy, we'll go after, like, someone like a, you know, Lee maybe, who's more down the line, like, it could have been a crazy person alliance that would have been a lot of fun, but instead he's going for the person he just saw made up a child. Like, you should have been really kindred spirits.
Yeah, I thought we were actually going to be, like, really on the same page in that regard, like, get together and do crazy things. I guess like he just had like his game plan, and I think he was focused on it, which is okay, but I think he just had a bit of tunnel vision that sort of cost him. Like he just like looked at the game a certain way. And like I'm not gonna blame him for that. Like he wanted to play how he wanted to play, and he makes amazing TV. But it's not what gets you the win, basically. Like if you want to do crazy things, you need some people as well. So that Like, that's something that I always wish I could have seen, was like an alliance between Rascals and this Henry, Michelle, Zach unit. I guess if I'm going to say only one regret, like actual gameplay regret, it's that I didn't get closer to Zach when I should have. And that was just sort of me being in cruise control because I was just playing for the second time. Like initial, like season four, me would have really like worked Zach and like become really good friends because we get along really well. I just didn't put the social effort in.
Mm. Well, getting to this vote where Zach and Shawnee go to exile, you vote for Shawnee, and it's something that she and Sean described as something that didn't come out until after the season, that had like so many ramifications. Definitely it felt like the viewers were lied to as well. So yeah. How did this happen? And also, how did you keep it a secret through the entire game with two people involved in it, Sean and Shawnee, who were with you the whole time?
I mean, keeping it a secret is easy. Like, that's just social gaming. Like, and it was the right move to make. Like, I mean, like, I'm a person that, like, has real friendships out there. Like, I consider them real friendships. But at the same time, like, I'm one of the more cutthroat game players. And so, to me, I knew where the numbers were going. Like, it was guaranteed going on Shawnee. She was getting the majority of the votes. And we didn't have an idol. And so, I'm like, well, I'm not just going to like on purpose put myself in the minority when I have like all these people on the other side that I like. Like, I liked all of the Abby John alliance and I already have connections to them. So it's like, I couldn't see the point in being in the minority, and I didn't want to upset Zach. And I knew if Shawnee came back, I could just maybe just work something out. So I basically just wanted to play everyone and just keep everything happy. And it was just like the way things panned out, it just was really quite funny because Sean was stuck on the other side. And then we were on our tribe and it was just quite easy to just throw Sean under the bus. I did the same thing in season four. Me and Sean were the only ones to vote for Luke and I just blamed it on Daisy.
Right. And when was that?
So when Sean was voted out in season four, we were trying to get Luke voted out and me and Sean were the only ones that held to that. So there were two votes and it was so easy for me to just blame it on Daisy as the other person who wouldn't vote Sean. And I just did the same thing again. I wasn't just going to put myself in the minority. Like, I was there to win. When it happened that Shawnee came back, it basically just worked that I could lie. On the flip side of that, Zach didn't believe me that I voted for Shawnee when I tried to get back in with Zach. So it didn't actually work to my advantage.
Right. Well, did you have plans for after that tribal council? Because now, so you've lost two people. If it hadn't gone to a swap, did you anticipate what you'd be doing after that?
Oh, I knew Rascals were pretty screwed at that point. Like, the Henry Shawnee vote is where it sort of, like, you could see it dropping because, like, Lee and John had lied to me. And I think that was, like, the first time John had ever just straight up lied to my face.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it was the sort of thing where you could, like, I don't blame them for it. Like, they were putting themselves in a winning spot. But, like, you could see that, like, they didn't have any sort of interest in really keeping me, and I knew that, like, if Lydia and Sean started getting rid of people like me, it would pull Abby in even closer.
Yeah, not a great spot. But then you come back to Vakuma at the swap. Shawnee comes back. Any concerns about Shawnee coming back, considering you'd voted for her, or you were like happy to have that ally back?
No, it was fine. That was happy days.
Yeah, the Vakuma dynamic seems to be, like, what we've heard, a really positive one. Is there anything in particular from Vakuma that really stands out to you as, like, important strategically before we start getting into, like, the Matt Rogers stuff and the flip possibilities? You know, when it's kind of just, like, a straight shot, you are taking out Abby, who's someone, obviously, you had the relationship with. So, yeah, what was that kind of, like, strategically for you?
That was the sort of thing where we got there and it was weird. Because if Makuta had have actually wanted to stay together, we could have so easily got Matt Rogers and just started voting out Vakuma members. And that was a possibility I wanted to go down. But it ended up being that Shawnee and Abby just refused to work together. Like, Abby immediately threw Shawnee under the bus, and Shawnee did the same back to Abby. And it was basically a case of me trying to get the votes on Lydia instead of Abby to see if I could buy her some time to work something else out. And the others just didn't go for it.
Yeah, I mean, you would have been, like, the only one there who was the connecting factor between them. Like, I could see that the others wouldn't work together.
Yeah, they had no interest in working together. Shawnee was a lot happier to just have a fresh start with some different players. And, like, Abby just continued down that path, which was definitely the right thing for Makuta, but it wasn't the right read for the new tribe. Like, they were more interested in sort of like getting rid of anyone they considered a threat for the late game and working in with people that like they could sort of use later on. So I guess the dynamic there was that like John, Abby and Lydia were just pretty screwed the second that we couldn't get Shawnee and Abby to work together.
We saw a lot of Shawnee connecting with the new players. We often get to see Shawnee's social game. What were your initial relationships like with these new allies for you?
Me and Shawnee went into Vakama basically after the initial like 24 hours working things out. We pretty much just went in with the goal of Shawnee wanted to be better friends with Flick and Brooke than they were with each other, and I wanted to be better friends with Lockie and AK than they were with each other. And I think for the most part, we actually succeeded. Shawnee definitely succeeded, and I think I became very close to AK. I didn't get that close to Lockie. I think they were definitely still closer than I wanted by the time that we sort of like went through all the days on Vakama Beach.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about the AK relationship in the exit interview as well. Something that, you know, I think we felt like it seemed so clear that you guys were snakes from before the game. It seemed like there'd be that intrinsic connection. Did you work with him as well as we would have hoped?
Yeah, I think we got along very well. We're probably, like, if there's anyone that's the most similar to me, it's probably AK. Definitely, he's more similar to me than Nick in the fact that just the styles are different. Like that we have like slightly different strengths, slightly different like ways that we look at things. He's just as cutthroat as me.
Yeah, I think that one of the major things that gets discussed through this Vakama tribe is Matt Rogers, his attempts to flip, what we didn't see. I know it's something that's been kind of talked about online and something that Shawnee spoke about, but she really did talk about how you were in the driver's seat for this vote. So can you give us a perspective on that John vote? Obviously, John from season 4, that relationship, he's going to go home, kind of what was going to happen, why you entertained it, and why it didn't happen.
Okay, so Matt Rogers was always looking to flip. Like he was trying to get through to merge because he knew that he had huge numbers if he could, and he just needed to get a bit of a run going to be able to do that. And so I guess his focus was getting out like his rivals, which were sort of Lockie, AK, and Brooke. And so he was always willing to entertain that. That's something I was interested in when we first hit the beach and we had like the Makuta people still around. But then again, when we were getting down the line, I actually wanted to make the flip and take out Brooke. Me and Flick talked about it quite a lot and then eventually decided at that vote before John went home, we decided we wanted to vote Brooke out and we started working on it. For anyone that hasn't heard me talk about it at all, I'll go through it very quickly. Me and Flick talked first, then I talked to Shawnee. Shawnee said she didn't care because I'd helped her get rid of all the people she wanted out. So she was going to come along with us. That's 3 votes. John knew that his head was on the chopping block, so he was down for it. We ended up having a chat late at night. And then the very last person for me to confirm with was Matt Rogers. We go out in the middle of the night and have the full conversation, which included a sort of deal where he would tell Mo to protect Nick and just keep Nick until merge, and I would protect Matt. And then we finish the conversation and we're going to like split, go our separate ways to go back to camp. and I bump into Lockie, who's hiding behind a tree.
Maybe he just was the tree.
He's like massive. He's 6'7". Him hiding is not a good idea. And especially because I actually have very good night vision. I used to just go walk off all the time in the night with not really any drama. So I see him there straight away and I'm just like, hey, man. And he's just like, oh, hey. And I very quickly had to basically start trying to put a bit of a lie to him. And it's not really hard to lie. Like, you can just sort of like say, you know, like me and Matt were just like having a chat. Matt kind of wants to do this. And it's just so easy to make a lie around that, where you basically say, Matt's trying to get a thing done, but I'm not really interested. And then Lockie's happy. But then I get back to camp and all of a sudden AK has been told the entire plan by Matt. Now, this is where it gets like a little bit iffy, because I was angry and emotional. But that's not really 100% why I then flipped back. So I was angry at Matt and I was just like, well, if Matt's just going to like snitch on me, then like I really don't want to play with someone that does that. But on top of that, there's also a strategic reason that it's a really bad idea to just keep going when everyone knows, because if I'm going for Brooke and Brooke finds out about it, which she would if like AK knows, Lockie knows, basically she's going to come back and want to take out me because I'm the one gunning for it. So all of a sudden you have now Brooke on one side, Harry on the other side. Matt Rogers just sitting safe in the middle. He becomes a swing vote and has all the power. And so basically, because of the information being given up, I lost all the power in that play. And Matt Rogers all of a sudden has all the power, all the swing vote. He doesn't necessarily have to tell Mo to protect Nick because he doesn't really need me that much anymore.
Yeah, because he can vote you out.
he can just like, he can vote me out. And if he doesn't vote me out, he's like, oh, well, you owe me now because like I helped you do a thing. Mm-hmm. So like the strategic side of it is basically I lost all power by him completely giving up the plan, because if Brooke and Lockie are sending votes my way, then it becomes Matt in charge, basically, which is what Matt wanted. And I really wasn't keen to give up that power.
Yeah. Why were you so hell-bent on Brooke specifically?
Well, Brooke basically I knew was going to be a late-game threat. Like, she's fantastic at challenges. She's very smart. She was also the least connected to me in the entire tribe. Because I guess like her and Lockie definitely spent a lot of time together. And like, while I got along with them really well, I actually didn't socialize with them a ton. I spent a lot more time with Flick, a lot more time with AK, with Shawnee, with John. So I was probably a lot happier to just take John through, and take Flick through, and sort of like just get rid of a threat, basically, and get rid of someone that wasn't that close to me at the time.
So if Lockie had caught you, but Matt Rogers hadn't spilled the plan, you still would have been pretty keen to go ahead with it?
Yeah, I probably would have done it. It wasn't the fact that he sort of spun a story. It's the fact that he just told the entire plan that really kind of bugged me, because it would have been so easy to just lie. Like, you could have just told AK, like, we were just having like a chat, like, would you be interested? And then AK would say no, and then basically we just go back to normal with AK and Lockie both assuming that Matt had pulled me aside and I wasn't interested.
Were you able to bounce back in terms of like as an alliance after that? Like, that sounds like a pretty big fracture. Obviously Vakama is going to be your group going forward. So do you feel like they trusted you again after that and you bounced back from it?
Nah. And Lockie and Brooke like never trusted me. They didn't trust me going like the whole way through it. AK had to keep vouching for me. And then from that point on, they definitely didn't trust me. I know that like hypothetically, if Vakama had have got the numbers post-merge, Lockie and Brooke would have blindsided me as soon as possible after getting the numbers. Like, Lockie told me straight away when we went to jury, he's like, I was going to blindside you like at the first opportunity.
Yeah.
So they definitely didn't trust me after that, and they had no reason to.
Yeah. To move into the advantage, which is something we obviously have spoken about at length in the exit, and obviously we've commentated on the fact that it was difficult because you didn't know when the merge would be. Is there anything around this from a production standpoint that we haven't already covered in terms of, like, maybe trying to get that information from production, what you were able to know? Like, that, it's just crazy to me that it was such a deciding factor, and it's this very meta thing.
I probably should have, like, seen if I could, like, done some meta gameplay, because I really didn't. Yeah, there was just, like, look, like, there was, like, half of it was the fear of us, like, going back to Tribal Council, because we hadn't won many challenges, and so there was the possibility that we save Nick and then one of the five of us goes when we go back to Tribal. Like, that was a real possibility. Like, you can't just assume that, like, we save someone, we immediately go to Merge, because Merge in my season was at 12 and we're still at 13 people. So it was something like, where do you just assume that, or do you let things play out? And I guess that just comes back to me being a bit more of a cutthroat player as well, because, like, a little part of me just sort of saw, like, if you don't give them anything, that's one less person between you and $500,000. And obviously that's a bad sort of thing if it's one of your friends that would be voting with you. But at the same time, it's still another person gone. And I wasn't actually 100% sure that Nick was gone. Like, we knew he was kind of in trouble, but at the same time, like, what if you give him something and it saves someone else? I don't know. But the main thing was, we thought that we would just go back to another challenge.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of meta stuff around this. It's like, if you waste up or use up a non-elimination on saving whoever's going to get saved there, then you might not get to be saved by a non-elimination in the future. Like, there's other elements to this. Or, I mean, that non-elimination could save an enemy as well that's, you know, worse for you than a Nick or a Dave or whoever you thought was going to go. So there's a lot of ways about predicting production in this that is almost uncomfortable for me, because it's so far beyond the game, but it just is part of the game now.
If we're going to be blaming production as well, like, if we're going on a production hate thing, like, just give me an idol. Like, Makuta Beach already had, like, an idol. Why didn't they have an advantage and Vakum Beach get another idol? Because I'm, like, I'm pretty sure there was no idol there after the Matt Rogers one, because every single person was looking for hours every single day from the time Matt played his until we got to Merge. And, like, you would think that one of us would have found it, but the advantage was the only thing that was out there. So basically, like, Makuta was given more idols than Vakuma, essentially.
Yeah, this is something I've definitely complained about, because it's such an easy thing to rectify that it's irritating to me. Like, it's so obvious that Pandora's Box, which was this whole big deal, should have had your advantage because that's new and different and kind of scary. That's Pandora's Box. Then they win a swimming challenge. They go get cake. That should be the extra vote that was in Pandora's Box. It's like, you still win a reward, you still win cake, you can still get an advantage, but it's not too powerful. And then you just hide an idol at Vakuma, because, yeah, Matt Rogers is on Vakuma pre-swap, post-swap, finds the idol, plays the idol, and then that idol gets re-hidden at whoever wins a swimming challenge for cake. And that offsets a balance in a very strange way. In US Survivor, you would never see a beach get two idols, especially considering Matt Rogers didn't even find the Makuta idol. He was only ever on Vakuma, and then the idol got hidden at Makuta. Logistically, it makes no sense. It's still irritating to me.
It sounds like you're more annoyed than me.
I mean, I definitely have spoken about it through a lot of the season, because it just makes no sense. And it's interesting, because you would think they would want to help Matt Rogers. And I've always said, like, it's strange to me, like, they could have swapped. It probably would have been more interesting for TV had they swapped. They definitely could have hidden an idol for him, or I guess someone else to find. And I definitely don't think there was an idol there. I think your advantage was a counter to two idols being on Makuta, but that is not the same as an idol. You know, it's got a time limit, it's confusing, and it's less powerful than an idol. So it's not a thing that they can equate to an idol and put on Vakuma as if that solves the problem.
Yeah, I guess, like, I guess the advantage that was there would have been, like, helpful for Matt Rogers, knowing that we would have just gone at 13. Like, that's one less tribal. And I have no idea how long it was there. It was in the weirdest spot. Like, it was just a nut on the ground, basically. Like, that was the part that you could actually see that had yellow on it. And, like, most people just looked, like, in things that actually were significant, whereas this was literally in the middle of the ground. Like, it was the weirdest spot. So I have no idea how long it was there. It could have been there since Matt Rogers was there. But it would have probably helped him a little. But, yeah, if it was an idol, I would have given that to Nick straight away. And I kind of regret it as well, because season four Harry would have given the advantage over straight away just to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, if there was an idol of Akamat, which, again, I really, really doubt, then that's still not okay, because then why do you guys get an advantage as well? Like, it's so unequal, and it's just so easily solvable. I can't believe no one was like, this is not right. Like, we can't. Anyway, I'm going to get moved past this season after this deep dive, but it just is kind of crazy from a production standpoint.
Yeah, but when you're playing, you kind of just have to accept that things aren't fair. Like, Survivor isn't, like, a fair game. It's like there's always clear, like, things where it's like it's advantaging someone in some way.
Yeah, totally true. I just think also it's better TV to kind of mix them all around. I mean, Dave ended up making great TV with that second idol, but it just makes sense for your advantage to be in Pandora's box. Anyway, these are my production critiques. To kind of go back a little bit to the Flick vote, you had wanted to work with Flick, as you said, against the Brooke Lockie contingent. Obviously, now you guys are in trouble. You're going to play your advantage. Flick ends up going home. Did you have any other plans there about maybe working with Flick to go against the Brooke and Lockie side that you had been, you know, entertaining the idea of taking them out earlier?
At that point, I had no, like, sway. Like, I'd sort of lost some of my authority by pulling out of the Brooke vote before and, like, having it sort of blown up on me. So I actually didn't have the best standing to, like, make a blindside at that point. And so I was just kind of accepting the idea of us getting to merge as a crew and that being my crew. So when AK threw out Flick's name, I was just like, yeah, sure. Like, that's fine with me. AK wants to get rid of Flick. Like, I'm just going to go along with it. I had a lot of suspicion that Lockie and Brooke would try and get rid of me there. It made a lot of sense for them to, because I was the least, I guess, I don't know, I was the least in with them. Like, I was the most suspicious. So I kind of, I pushed that tribal pretty hard. Like, that was very, like, season four Dirty Harry, like, sort of calling people out and saying things and, like, trying to get a reaction. And I actually couldn't work out whether they were going to put votes on me or not. So I was going to just play it. The only time I could really read it, like, 100% and just knew, like, this is the case, was when AK got up and Lockie, like, sort of got up as well, which they didn't really show on the episode. But it was just so easy to read in that moment that they were telling the truth and they'd put votes on Flick.
Why was it easy to read? Because we've seen someone get screwed by this before with Sean and Benji. So I commend you and I commend AK for that relationship and for reading it correctly. But how did you do that?
You can sort of just tell. Like, there's like different ways that people talk. There's different tones. There's like the way that, like, their body sort of looks. Like, these are all things that is worth actually, like, looking at before you play Survivor. It's actually looking into, like, body language, eye contact, tone, that sort of thing. And you can just tell, like, when someone's being, like, truly genuine. Like, the way that they talk is a certain way. And you could just tell straight away, like, AK was being genuine. I couldn't tell whether he was being genuine because he really wanted the advantage on his side or whether he just wanted me, but it was just so easy to tell that he was being genuine. Lockie also is not a good liar. So Lockie, like, calling out sort of gave it away as well.
Your thought process in coming back, not telling everyone immediately about the advantage until you tell Shawnee and then the group at the challenge, why were you so cagey with it at that point? And do you feel like that was a benefit to your game? Or when you look back, you think maybe extra discussion time around it would have been helpful?
But I don't know. Like, it's sort of, I just recognize that it would have been terrible television to have me tell the entire group. Because basically they would have just been like, all right, we can just, like, lose the challenge if we want, walk up to tribal, not say anything, and then, like, vote for just, like, wacky names, and then I play my thing. So it kind of is, like, TV wrecking, like, advantage if everyone knows about it.
Are you allowed to tell people? Like, were production encouraging you not to? Or was that was just your decision because you care about the TV product? Or, like, there are other elements at play?
I mean, you're always kind of encouraged to keep things sort of TV friendly, I guess. But, like, they weren't, like, heavily, like, into me all the time being like, oh, like, you have to do this with your advantage. Like, that's not how it works. But, like, they're always keen to see you, like, err on the side of helping the TV show, which is fair. Like, they're trying to make a good show. And so, like, I feel like I'm one of the people that recognizes that. Like, you're in a TV show. You should probably, like, do your best to not be a jerk to the people trying to make it good television. So I just sort of, I kept it to myself because of that mostly, but also because if we did go to tribal, there's the chance of me just being able to do that again, like bluff with it a second time and just get someone else voted out.
Mm.
There's always like the chance to do that. Cause I was always thinking like, just get yourself like further, like chip the numbers away and just like keep pushing. So the real power just came from its ability to bluff, because you can honestly, genuinely say, you know, me and Shawnee aren't going home. Like, I know for a fact. And you can just sort of say that. And then all of a sudden people like AK and that have to vote for each other. It's probably more useful as a tool to bluff with than just about anything else. So I didn't tell them. And then we get to actually like the challenge and having all that extra time. I know Nick's already sort of told you that there was a ton of extra time, and I was 50-50 the whole way. I think the show made it look like Lockie convinced me not to do it, but I was really just sort of like having a think, getting all the opinions. And then like, I still had it in my pocket, in my socks the entire time, like ready to go. And then just sort of decided in the moment against it.
Yeah, it's such an interesting thing from a production standpoint, because I know that we really liked, like anyone I spoke to really liked this advantage in terms of creating a non-elimination. It's something we'd want to see again. But as someone who's not as kind as you to production, if they find it, they definitely could do that and like make the entire episode a total waste. And I'm sure the edit wouldn't show that. So it would be this like completely manufactured product. So that is concerning. I think the only way they could go around it would be to be like, you literally can't tell the whole tribe, which feels like too much interference. So now I'm thinking like there are issues with this advantage from a production standpoint that I hadn't considered as much.
I think that it would be fair to have punishments involved in advantages. Like, it's not really unfair if players know about things. Like, you could just put like a thing in the advantage saying like, if you tell anyone about it, like it becomes void. And it's like, no one will believe you, but like you can still tell people that. And like, that can be an added element to it. That's actually quite funny, is that you have to tell people that it's void, which no one believes. Like, I think it's fine to put some sort of, like rules around advantages, like that there's like a negative outcome if you tell someone about it.
Yeah, I don't hate the strategic implications of that. I would hope it would be transparent. Like, one thing we really didn't enjoy from like Island of the Idols last season was that they weren't allowed to tell anyone about Rob and Sandra, but that wasn't clear on the show, and we didn't know what the punishment for that would be, but then people were still doing it. Like, it was very vague. And it felt like beyond the game, like they just wanted Rob and Sandra to be a surprise. For this, I totally get the TV element. And yeah, I do think that if they work it into the advantage and we know about it and it's another like little wrinkle and a little twist and a thing that makes you lie, I like that. But don't lie to the audience about it.
I think the thing that actually did annoy me most from a production standpoint is they refused to let me keep the advantage and use it as like a fake, because I thought it would be so funny to have someone that's being voted out and have them find like this advantage, and then like, so JLP says it's like expired.
Why didn't they let you keep it? Because any like idols that expire, they allow you usually to keep as a fake in the US at least.
And this goes back to the wording on it, which was the exact reason why we weren't sure about like using it with Nick or not, was because it never specified merge. It never mentioned merge. It just said, this is good for the next two tribals. And so there wasn't actually this real strict time thing on it. And so if I had have used it, people would have just thought it's completely real.
Yeah. And I guess that you didn't know when it had been hidden. So that was the kind of thing where people were like, well, it said the next two tribal councils are clearly going to merge after the next two tribal councils. But for you, you're like, well, It could have been hit at any time. I could have found it at any time. Like, the merge could be completely independent of it. So I get that fear as well.
Yeah, and the fact that it just never mentioned merge was part of the reason why we were weirded out. There was a whole bunch of reasons. Like, we literally talked about it for hour after hour, like the deal with it. And so, like, I've sort of, like, run through everything in my head. To me, it was just, like, it was confusing and it was a risk, and I didn't want to take the risk at that time.
In terms of getting to the merge and Dave being the mole and Dave being someone who you had played with to a degree and whose game you knew at least from not really being on the same beach, but being on the same season beforehand, did you have any doubts in Dave? And as you said, you know, back the relationship could have been a bit stronger. So did you doubt that being your lifeline at the merge?
Oh, definitely. But it was just like, I think Lockie might have been the only one that was like really invested in it. Everyone else was just like, well, this is the best shot we've got. I think there was a thing that they actually included where me and AK talked through everyone pre-merge. We went through every single player, looked at their best way to get to the end, and we identified Sean, Lee, Zach, and Dave as like the potential wild cards that might do something else. Like, they might do something out of the ordinary. Like, all the others were just going to chill and they were going to be in an alliance. And we thought about whether we go the Sean Lee route, and we thought about whether we go Zach and Dave. Zach and Dave just made more sense to us because Dave had had the connections with Valkyrmar. Zach had had the connections with me and Shawnee. We literally said, you can vote out whoever you want. And Zach picked Sean, which made a lot of sense for Zach. I mean, you're getting rid of someone that had sort of like pulled out of a vote with you. You're like voting for someone that has voted for you. We were also thinking that there would probably be some sort of like alpha boy alliance that would involve like Zach, Dave, Lockie, Lee, Tarzan. And so we thought like they would maybe push towards that. And so it just like to us, even if they weren't in with us, it made sense for them to vote Sean in our eyes, and it was our best shot.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this doesn't go very well. At the merge, looking ahead at your game, had you had the numbers? What were your long-term plans, you know, if you had any, in terms of, like, who you wanted to sit next to, who you would have been targeting first on Valkyrmar, when that would have happened, just from, like, a long-term standpoint?
I wanted Sean first, Lockie second.
Right. And so it would have broken that quickly.
Yeah. I wanted Sean first because I knew she had a lot of connections and she's a great player. Like, she'd made it to second before. And then I wanted Lockie second because I didn't want the possibility of there being that alpha male alliance. And I knew Lockie and Brooke were going to come after me. So I figured that if those two moves happen, then all of a sudden the game becomes fluid instead of just alliances, which, like, that's basically what I needed. Like, I needed there to be fluid gameplay that was going back and forth if I wanted to get to the end. And as far as sitting next to someone, I don't think I ever thought about it properly, but I'll sit next to anyone that I'll beat. Like, I have no, like, I guess, what's the right word? Like, I don't care about, like, a respect vote for, like, taking someone good to the end. Like, I'm not about that. I would have taken anyone I thought I could beat.
Yeah, I mean, talking about this fractured gameplay and what it could have been, when Lockie goes, obviously the next episode when you go, Valkyrmar don't turn on each other yet. They attempt to turn on each other the next vote, and then Exile stops that from happening, and then they never turn on each other. So why at that point, when you'd been so willing to at points take Brooke out, at points take Lockie out, if you got it to that point, why did Valkyrmar stick together? Was it just like, well, we're screwed anyway? Because, like, obviously it's your name on the chopping block.
You mean, like, for my vote? I think, like, I was always willing to flip. Like, Shawnee wasn't. AK and Brooke were, like, I don't want to speak for them, but, like, they always seemed like they would entertain those sort of ideas, but only go for them if they were necessary, which I think it was getting to that point. I was always willing to flip, but it was so obvious that, like, no one was really interested. Like, talk to Tarzan. Like, Tarzan didn't have anything really, like, meaningful to give me back when I said that, like, essentially, like, I came up to him and Jackie and I go, what do I have to do to keep me and Shawnee in the game over Akan Brook? They basically just gave me sort of like a bit of nonsense answers that don't really mean anything. Talked to other people and they didn't really give me anything. The only person that gave me anything was Dave, who said I should vote for AK. But I didn't really trust anything Dave said. And then, like, basically it was the sort of thing where no one, like, everyone had made it apparent that they probably weren't going to flip, even if, like, I sort of tried to get AK or anything like that. And then the only other option for me was to try and do something that wasn't strategic. Like, strategically, I was out of options. Like, it just made sense for them to get rid of me. Like, it made total sense because I can sort of slip through cracks. So there's nothing left strategically. So I thought, oh, why don't we go for something more of an emotional vote or a social vote? And so I went to Lee and Zach, and I knew that Jackie got on their nerves. Like, Jackie and Zach just never, ever, ever got along. And it was so obvious. Like, they used to have fights. They used to argue about everything. Like, they just didn't want to be on the same beach together. And so I pitched that. I'm like, Lee, Zach, like, you can get rid of someone. It works strategically because you're getting rid of a sort of strong competitor, like a female who, like, wouldn't be in your sort of alpha alliance if that ever exists. And on top of that, you can, like, have all of this time without someone that annoys you and still have the numbers. Like, you can just have the numbers, you get rid of someone that annoys you, and you can, like, really have a great time the next week or so. And I pitched that to them, and they were interested. And Zach always would at least entertain an offer like that, which I like. Like, even if you're not going to go with something, at least entertain an offer. But Lee just sort of, like, was weird about it. He sort of, like, wanted to talk to, like, other people, which, if anyone is going to play in the future, don't talk like that, because it makes it seem like the other people are your superiors that are telling you what to do. So if anyone ever comes to you to entertain an offer, don't say you're going to go check with a specific person, which is exactly what he did.
And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And we are back. All right, Harry, we have a couple of questions from the listeners, and sure, then we will get to the jury stuff that we wanted to talk about. So Pranay Das asked something I'm pretty sure we spoke about on the last deep dive. I'm getting deja vu. He asked you to describe your castmates as ice cream flavors. Does anyone stand out to you as a particular flavor?
Damn, that's a hard question.
What about Dave? What I mean, Golden God, I feel like there's something there for Dave.
He would have to have, like, a sort of, like, golden flavor, wouldn't he? It'd have to be something that's, like, a bit, it's, like, a little bit, like, elite, I guess. Like, you would have, like, gold flakes or something on it. Like, if you ever want to make a food just, like, unnecessarily, like, expensive and elaborate for no reason, you just put gold flakes on it. So I'm going to go with that. Gold flakes. We'll go honeycomb ice cream. And we'll go, like, cookie crumble in it as well. Like, sort of, like, a gold or yellow sort of colored crumb. Because that way it's, like, gold through. Because I think you need some sort of, like, lavish thing, because he's the golden god, but at the same time, like, he's sort of for everyone. Like, there's quite few people that dislike him. So we have to go with a sort of, like, palate pleaser in just, like, some honeycomb or something like that.
And now insist that you make this ice cream. You have to. What about...
Yeah, I'll make it. Tarzan's lime ice cream for sure. I can do that. We'll make lime zest, so that's easy one.
What about the Rascals as an ice cream as a whole?
That's an interesting one. You could go like, I'm trying to think of like things that Nick and Shani like, and none of them go with like ice cream flavors. but if it was going to be Little Rascals, like it's pretty much just going to be something that's like a classic with some tricks up its sleeve. So maybe I would put like some Pop Rocks in there or something like that. Maybe go chocolate ice cream for Dirty Harry. I have actually made, like, we have a Dirty Harry ice cream, by the way, and it's pretty much just chocolate obsession. It's like everything chocolate that we've ever used before. I don't know. What does Nick like?
What does Nick like? I like that idea of like, yeah, something a little spicy, like a Pop Rock or something like that, that just like takes you by surprise.
Some sort of like thing that makes it a bit of fun. Because I know like Shani likes, let's just go with margarita. Like, because I know that Nick and Shani both like margaritas. So let's go with a margarita ice cream with like some salt and then Pop Rocks on the side.
Yes, very, very good. I'm trying to think if anyone stands out as like a particular ice cream flavor. I feel like Sean, I've never known how to define Sean as a player or into Hogwarts houses. And I feel like as an ice cream, that might be difficult as well.
Yeah, Hogwarts houses is fun, actually, because it's like you've got all the baddies in Slytherin and then you've got some of the like heroes that are going straight into Gryffindor. Matt Rogers and Tarzan straight into Gryffindor.
This season was a lot of Gryffindors. That's something that Tess and I worked out in our recap. We were like, this, we understand the theme of the season because it was like primarily Gryffindors, which was a really interesting takeaway, I think, from a very silly activity.
Yeah. Couple of Ravenclaws as well, because some of them are just very smart, straight up smart. I would put Shane Gould in Ravenclaw.
I feel like I'm learning so much about these castaways by being A, in their Hogwarts houses, and B, flavors of ice cream. But I don't know if I go with the margarita ice cream. I don't know if that's for me, but I'm into the very gold ice cream. I don't know why. So
yeah,
another winner for Dave.
Definitely.
You just like letting you know that like everything Dave touches at the moment really does turn to gold. So you should make that ice cream and you should market it and you should put it on Instagram and it will be pretty good for you. If Dave lets you use the Golden God, you know, title.
Yeah, if Dave's listening, let's make an ice cream together. I've got a tester ice cream maker at home. We can try and make this happen.
And I want a cut of it because my question, and Renee wants a cut from like, India because his question.
You've inspired me.
Yeah, exactly. Great, great business idea. We're really making a lot of progress. Okay, Stander on Twitter asks, I wonder if there are any specific scenes that didn't make the edit, but Harry wishes they did. Obviously, we've talked about the John vote and what we didn't see there, but if there's anything in terms of these scenes that are game-related or funny or anything, are there any moments that you stand out, like you wish that would have made the edit?
I think some of the stuff at early Makuta was a lot of fun that didn't make the edit. If I'm going to pick anything, the coffee reward ended up actually being a lot more fun than we expected. Like, I remember me and Shani seeing the coffee reward and being like, eh, that's okay. But then everyone got super hyperactive. Everyone stayed up way later than normal. And then there was, like, a ton of, like, land crabs that were sort of, I guess they were, like, attracted by the fact that we're all sort of running around and doing stuff. And then, of course, people go crazy because it's literally crabs biting your toes in the middle of the dark. John and Zach are, like, smacking them to death with sticks and then cooking them. And then behind the shelter, I actually got a stick and scared all the people that were hiding up on the shelter by like rustling it in the back of the shelter and pretending it was another crab. And I really wish that had made the edit.
Andy Root asks, what did you learn from the Oscar Linus fallout and how did that influence your second game?
Lying about Oscar. The thing I've learned in Survivor is you need to lie way less than what you think. Like, you really just need to pick your moments for lies and make sure that they can't come undone. Don't bother lying about anything from your home life because it's never going to achieve very much. And like, if you get caught out, then you're automatically untrustworthy. So don't lie about your home life unless it's to hide that you're rich or something. And then like, lie less than what you think. Like, I think the lie that I told to Shani about Sian voting for her was like literally the only time I lied to her.
Yeah.
But it was super valuable because of like me telling the truth with her the whole rest of the time.
Yeah. That was something I think I was saying to Nick before, was like, only really lie when you need to, because sometimes you need to lie, you know, and then you're going to do it. And then if you're lying on top of that extra, now you have a lot of lies to keep straight.
Yeah, and you have players like Tarzan that have so much potential because they tell the truth all the time. So when they do lie, it's actually, like, very powerful.
Yeah, this is something I spoke about with Lisa Stanger from Survivor New Zealand. She's obviously an unbelievable player, and she said she used that. She used hyper-honesty. She was so, so, so honest for so long that at the point where she started lying, people just couldn't. They believed it. Like, they could have believed that she would lie. And she really, really, like, lulled them into that false sense of security and then, like, went for the jugular with a very necessary, lethal lie that was amazing because she had built up that goodwill through so much honesty, which was, I think, is a really interesting way to play.
Yeah, and I need to give a shout-out to Matty Wahlberg because that was his exact strategy going into season four. Like, he had hyper-honesty and he was planning on lying more when he got to, like, final 10 or something like that.
Ryan Patterson asked, how did you feel about the magazine reward? It seemed equal considering it reminded people of everyone's games, but it felt like they really painted you as a threat.
Hated it. it was quite clear that there was only a few people that were getting like hyped up by the magazine and a lot of people that were receiving things that sort of downplayed their game. And like for me to be on the cover and for it to be this thing where it's like, they hadn't seen that bit. Like, we went out there to All Stars and they hadn't seen me taking people out at the end of the game. So to have it on the cover and being like Harry, like, gets rid of his nemesis while other people have, like Shawnee came fourth and her one was something like having a holiday. And, like, Sian came second and it's, like, her dropping an idol. Like, it's all these, like, clumsy things or things to downplay their game of, like, amazing players.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting because it was, like, looking back through Survivor history, it was like, well, not only is this not history to the players out on the island who never got to see it, it hadn't even aired, I don't think, in Australia at the time, what they were talking about in terms of Janine going home, because it was pretty early on in the game. So I was like, this is actually the future that they're seeing.
Yeah, it was just sort of, like, crazy, and I really, like, didn't like it at the time. Because it's like I'd sort of just gotten over the initial push for me to go home as a threat.
Yeah. Well, okay, last question before we get to the jury stuff, which is very off topic. But Ivan Ornalis asks, who other than Nick Wilson, of course, is Harry rooting for at Winners at War? And who else from his season did he hope would be on Australian Survivor All-Stars? So that's two questions. Let's deal with them separately, I guess. What are you thinking of Survivor Winners at War at the moment?
I love it. I'm up to date. The people I'm going for, Nick's obviously at the top, just because I think he makes the game fun and we're very similar. Some of the other players I love at the moment, I love so many of them. Like, I really like Denise. I really like Ben. Pretty much if any player that's like only played once before wins again, like, I'm all for that. And then I also love Tony. I mean, like, who doesn't love Tony, really? Mm-hmm. So if I'm going to pick people I'm really going for right now, let's say Tony, Nick, and Denise.
Yeah, great group. I mean, it's a great group in general. Who from your season did you hope would be there that wasn't there?
From season four, I really actually genuinely hoped Matty Wahlberg was there. One, because like we're good friends, so obviously that helps me. But on top of that, like, I feel like he probably had the most untapped potential. Like, he had a great game plan going towards merge. He was entertaining. I thought he would have made a good showing. I think it was also sad that we didn't get people like Janine on again, because I think Janine is amazing. She's a fantastic player. So I feel like just the audience in general missed out. Probably good for me that she wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the audience missed out by not having Janine there.
Is there anyone from the other seasons, just as a fan, that you think should have been on that wasn't there?
So a very quick story. When I came back from All Stars, we went through Sydney and I quickly met up with Stevie, and Maddie Wahlberg, just to have like a bit of food. And basically just in that like 1 hour where they'd never met each other before, they just had the funniest interactions, and it just made me want to see Stevie and Maddie together on a tribe.
I've actually also hung out with those two people together when we did a bit of a test for Talking Tribal. So I've also been in that very random combination.
It's weird because Matt bounced off of him really well, and Stevie is just so random, and like he's random at the same time as being like just sort of quite wholesome as a person. It was just such a funny interaction.
Yeah, I can see that because Maddie Wahlberg can be pretty dry, and I feel like there's a, his reactions to the craziness that Steve brings is quite funny.
There's a chemistry there. If Survivor producers are listening, put them on another season together.
Yeah, we've had Rob versus Russell. We've had Coach versus Ozzy. We now want these two players to lead tribes.
Stevie versus Wahlberg.
Yes. Okay, definitely. Well, okay, let's get to this jury stuff. Because as we said, you were at Jury Villa for a long time. You saw almost every person come in that wasn't Lockie. So just in general, can you give us a bit of a sense of the general Jury Villa vibe, the sentiment towards who was still in the game and what was still happening in the game as well?
Yeah. All right. So starting with that, we got to Villa, just me and Lockie, and essentially we didn't have a good read on the dynamic of Makuta. Like, it was very obvious that they were all playing safe. Like, they just wanted to sort of pick off Vakuma before they went at each other. Sort of like a semi-pagonging. Is that the right word?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like a semi-pagonging, and then there would be a flip maybe when there's, like, two Vakuma members left. And so we didn't really have any idea of the Makuta dynamic. So it was weird. Like, we sort of were kind of waiting for other people to come in so that we could actually have a debrief. So when the Zach vote happened, we literally just assumed it would be AK. Like, we'd been like asking the people to get us like some TV shows that we could watch with AK. We were like excited to like have a meal with him. Like, we were just like hyping ourselves to see AK. And it didn't happen. Like, the Zach happened, and I don't think they actually showed it, but like, we went mental on the jury bench because like, we just didn't know what was going on. That was the sort of infamous mic drop moment, and we thought, hey, maybe Mo has actually flipped. And so we didn't necessarily know what the deal was until Zach came out, and then Zach basically explained most of it. And then when Jackie came out next, we pretty much knew all of it from there. The thing about Tribal, like about Jury Villa, is you always know 99% of the game by the time the last person comes out. Like, secrets don't get kept at Jury Villa. Like, if anyone is going to Final Tribal Council thinking that they have secrets, like, they don't have secrets. Like, unless you've kept it from every single person in the game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's really interesting because you and Lockie were, due to circumstance, alone at Jury Villa for so long. To the point where they even did, like, a special Jury Villa episode of just you guys hanging out, even though no one new came in, which was really interesting. But, like, yeah, you have people kind of talking about and to the jury at Tribal Council. Brooke was saying Dave's going to win at her Tribal Council, as you explained. Mo with the mic drop moment and stuff like that. Does that work for a jury? Things like that, like actually, you know, talking to and talking about and really involving the jury in what you're talking about?
Yes and no. I really don't like any idea of like pandering to the jury, but there was definitely some people that didn't like to really like push their game at Tribal Council because it's not going to affect the votes. Like, it's so rare that Tribal actually is live. It's usually just a lot of nonsense talked, and then you go and do the vote you were always going to do. So in that sense, it is dumb to, like, do a lot of stuff at Tribal Council, but people should always be putting their game out there and making themselves look like a threat to the jury if they can, because people don't wait through the whole game to hear the Final Tribal Council. Like, that's just not how it works. Like, we're interpreting it as we go. Like, we're developing our opinions. So you really need to actually be someone that's present at tribal council, because we were listening to everything. And so when we hear things like Brooke calling out Dave and then the other people not doing anything about it, like, that's the thing that really affects our opinions.
So from a jury perspective, as you're watching it all and everyone's forming opinions, who were kind of the front runners in terms of what the jury wanted to vote for?
So I guess as a jury, like, things really started coming together once Jackie was in. Like, you don't form full opinions, but you are, like, forming, like, an idea of who you think is at the front. And it was quite apparent to all of us that Dave was a front runner, like, straight away, because it's like he has a resume, he's likable, and he has this sort of, like, strong identity. And he was just someone that, like, you'd think they would target. So Zach is, like, loves David. That was clear. If anyone was going to win on, like, being likable, like, Zach would have given his vote to Dave. I'm someone that really, like, goes for gameplay, but I like slightly bigger gameplay. Like, that's what I preference. So the fact that, like, he has multiple idols that come out, he ends up having, like, wins against his name for individual immunity, manages to do some other things that were quite apparent, like getting Zach to sort of go in his place to Exile Island. Like, that's something that, like, really just puts you at the forefront. Whereas people like Sean and Mo, everyone was just sort of waiting for them to do something bigger than what they were doing. Mostly because, like, everyone is basically the hero of their own story. And this is something where having a jury experience is actually really key. And the key thing to remember is that 6 out of the 7 Makuta people had never been on a jury before.
Mm-hmm.
David was the only person who'd been on a jury before, and he'd had that experience of people coming in one by one. And the thing that happens when you hear people coming in one by one is every single one of them thinks that they're the hero and that they've done all this amazing stuff. And you listen to all these stories where they talk about it, and it's so clear that they only played a part in all of these moves. And everyone wants to, like, think of it as, like, you know, it's my move, like, I did this. And it's just not the sort of thing that wins you votes. So basically, like, you're looking at things like forming a resume, and you've got someone like Dave who knows exactly how this happens. Like, people come in one by one, and they don't consider moves a resume booster because they had their own part in it. So, like, for example, the Sean thing where Sean and Mo let Jackie's vote play out and then Sean wanted to claim it, there is no way Jackie lets Sean claim that. No way. Because in Sean's mind, in Jackie's mind, she's come back to Villa and everyone's seen it in front of everyone that she made that move. Like, she made the vote, she got Zach out. She was the swing vote. And if you give Sean all of that credit as it being her biggest move, then, like, how does Jackie feel? Like, her toes have been stood on. Like, she's basically had this thing where it seemed like she's a puppet, and no one wants to vote for that. Like, if you're Jackie, you're not going to be like, oh, okay, I was the puppet and you were the puppet master and my move didn't count for anything and your move allowing it to happen is how this went down.
So how do you counteract that?
I think having a subtle game is okay if you make it to the end with other subtle players. But seriously, in Australian Survivor, if you get to Final 7, you should just be going gung-ho. Like, you shouldn't be holding back, because there is no second prize. Like, there's no point to getting yourself further. You should just be getting out any person you think has a better resume than you. Anyone that hasn't played a subtle game, you get them out immediately, because they're going to beat you. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want a resume, you need things that no one else can claim. You have to have them, like, because if you don't, you have nothing on your resume. There's other things that you can do to, like, get around that. Like, you can claim things like, I had the best timing or something like that, where it's like something like sort of that you don't have to substantiate that much. But really, like, you want an idol, you want an individual win, you want at least something you can like hedge your game on. And I think that that's part of the reason Sharm couldn't pull the votes is because she just didn't have a resume. And Mo was the same. Like, Mo, like, it's great gameplay to get yourself that far, but like, you don't have a resume. You haven't won any individual immunities. Like, you haven't found idols. You haven't found advantages. There's no blind side that you can claim like you were the key person in. You really need that resume to actually show something that made you above everyone else in some sort of way.
Yeah. So instead of trying to just, you know, play a subtle game and elevate those moves by what you say to the jury, which probably won't fly, I think what it is you have to be the biggest player in the final two. But it is only a final two. Like, for Mo and Sean, two people you were criticizing, or at least saying that they played a more subtle game in that respect, there's a different world. And if what Sean says is true and she would have taken Mo, and Mo told me she didn't know Sean, think she would have taken her, like, there's a different world where they're your only two options. And it's just about, yeah, I guess you're only choosing in that criteria between those two people. So as you're saying, take out people who have played bigger games, keep in people, yeah, who've played more subtle games, and then go head to head with that person.
And that's why we can't be too harsh on Mo and Sean, because if it goes to final two with them, then it's incredibly close. But at the same time, they were still cruising a bit when it got to like 8 or 7. Like, they were just kind of cruising because they knew the moves that they had to make to just get themselves to like final four, final three. And it was quite clear that they weren't just doing what was necessary to take out the biggest person each time. Like, you should never be targeting Tarzan or AK, mm-hmm, because AK, if he makes it to the end, yes, he gets some Vakuma votes, but you still have a Makuta majority. And you could potentially beat him. You can also beat him at final three because he had two blown out knees. He's not that great at endurance because of it. Like, you should really be keeping people like that, even if it doesn't make that much strategic sense. Like, you have to take those risks. Yeah. Like, there's no point. Like, I'm of the opinion that you get to final between 9 and 7, somewhere between there, and you just go gung-ho. It doesn't matter anymore, like, about protecting yourself. Like, you just need to go for it at that point, because there's no second, third prize, and you need resume boosters. Like, on top of that, like, I guess this is sort of like moving into something else I wanted to talk about, but having that sort of like subtle gameplay, like, it doesn't lend itself very well to a final tribal speech. Because you have to be so careful about exactly how you word things. Like, you're sort of just digging, you're like putting yourself, like, you're giving yourself a handicap going in by playing such a subtle game, because you have to articulate it perfectly. Like, even if Mo and Sean go up against each other, they're then going to have to articulate how they were somehow different from each other, which I don't know if either of them were good enough to necessarily do. And I think that sort of segues into the next thing, which is the biggest thing for me that I don't think anyone really talks about, but it's about having an actual identity as a player. And I think for Sean especially, this is like her greatest strength and her greatest weakness is being able to float in the middle. And it is fantastic at getting you to really deep in the game. Absolutely amazing. We've seen so many Australian players do it. You just kind of float. You're giving everyone options. You pull out of one option and you go with the other. You're always winning in that regard. But you go to the end with no identity. You're like a phantom of a player. And Sean really struggled with that coming into the end. And it's exactly why I gave the question I gave. I talked about whether she thinks her game was sort of destructive or constructive. And to me, that is where you have to have this character, this identity that you purvey. And I think if anyone is looking to see how you can get around this, there's a Paradigm video on YouTube. It's the guy that sort of, mm-hmm, talks a lot of Survivor. And he highlights Sarah Lucina's game, who I think is very similar to Sian. Sarah Lucina made it to the end, and what she did is immediately she gets into this final tribal council and she talks about how she's a cop that plays like a bad guy. And it was this identity, it's a character, and then everything can start to make sense from that. Like, you just build it out of this character. And Sian never really did that. Sian just went into there and she's like, I'm Sian. I played the middle. And you can't really connect anything with that. Like, whereas like David goes in and David's like, I'm a fun guy, but I'm also a cutthroat player. And by doing that, like, you have this identity that makes everything understandable and forgivable. Like, Tarzan is able to forgive David because David straight up was like, yeah, I played a social game and we're friends, but I also was being a cutthroat. And that's why you had to go. Yeah. Whereas like, it wasn't really put that way for Sian because she didn't have an identity. And I think this sort of plays into, like, I know there was some discussion around sort of like gender and that sort of thing. And I think, yes, that plays a role, but it's also because quite often there are some female players that don't push that identity. And the ones that do, do amazingly well. Like, you've got Sarah Lucina, who said that she's a cop that played like a bad guy. You've got things that have, like, Black Widow sort of, like, identity, where they play, like, a dominant game in that sense. And Sian just didn't bring that. And I wanted her to. I knew that she had that argument she could pull. And I was trying to, like, give her that ammunition by, like, talking about destructive versus constructive, because I think she played some amazing, like, destructive moves. She had a fantastic way of really pulling the rug out from her enemies. Like, she did it where she would make you believe you had a move, you would sort of go into cruise control, you wouldn't look for any other options, and then at the last second she would pull out of it and you would be left with, like, no time to hustle, no time to do anything, and it would just destroy your movements. And it was good, but you have to own it and you have to make it into something that's, like, forgivable and understandable.
Mm-hmm. Devil's advocate on the gender thing, because, like, I don't think Sian lost, especially to Dave, due to gender, but as you said, it's a factor in, you know, a social game. Obviously, it's something that exists. And you said, like, there's a way for Sarah to say, you know, like, I'm the cop who plays like a bad guy. There's a Black Widow thing. There's ways to work into it for sure. I still think harder for the mom archetype. And, like, is it as easy now for especially an old woman than for a young guy? I'm not so sure. I think for a guy to come in and be like, I was social but cutthroat, is more acceptable generally than even if a woman comes in, an older woman specifically, and is like, you thought I was the mom, but I was actually like the this killer. I think that while there might be something tangible to hold on to, I'm not sure if it would be as forgiven. Obviously, it depends on the jury and the person, but I think more broadly, surely it's not as easy.
Yeah. Well, like, maybe not as easy, but I think if there's any mums out there that are, like, applying for Survivor, intending on playing, I think one of the best ways around it is having a character or identity, because everything just feels that much more forgivable when people own it in that sense. Like, we sort of saw that with Pia. Like, she sort of went in with the smiling assassin Monica, and it definitely pulled more weight for her. Because if she hadn't have had that, I think she would have struggled the same way Sian has before. Because people were just sort of willing to, like, they were willing to just give her a little bit more. Like, they were willing to sort of, like, understand it and connect it. And I think so, if there is a strategy to get around that gender disparity, if it's there, I would say my advice would be have that sort of identity that's just very, like, very controlled. You understand it yourself and you know, like, which direction you're going.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Sian has had that, and that's why we've struggled to put her in the Hogwarts houses, and I think that that has been a difficulty. And you're right that it's, we said at the time, we're like, well, Dave seemed to have a better final tribal council than Sian. It's like, but Dave's game is so much easier to defend. Like, he has, he's running downhill, she's running uphill, defending her game versus the game that he's defending. But I also think that there's an awareness issue. Someone like Pia, she had a great final tribal council. She had a character. She's obviously an actress. She's a great speaker. But she was sitting next to Baden, and she kind of knew the best people for her to sit next to. Like, I'm not sure she would have won it necessarily against you, for example. So for Sean,
yeah,
like someone like Adam Klein is someone I've always gone back to, because at the final six, there's maybe two people he can beat at the end, but those are the two people he sits next to. He takes out every person he knows is going to beat him at the end in the end game. So I think that, yeah, I love the idea of identity. I love the idea of like having things to claim, but I also think that there's merit to playing a quieter game and using the end game to have the great awareness of knowing who would beat you, who you would beat, and then making a better final tribal council situation for yourself, especially in a final two where you're only against one person.
Of course. And I think some of these arguments are starting to like cross over a bit, like a Venn diagram, because it's like, if you're the sort of person that at final six or seven starts taking out everyone that would beat you, that then is also, it's also resume moves. And it's also an identity that you're like the person that started slow, sped up at the end or something like that. Like you can link it into everything. But I think at the end of the day, like you need to make a few of those extra things happen.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think there's a lot of issues. Like Sean thought she could beat Dave, as she said, in the final tribal council. And like, do you think that there, if she comes in and she owns it and she's like, look, you thought I was a hero? I was actually the snake, you know, like, and I think that the identity thing was an issue in her first season as well, because there was a lot of mateship and it takes the strong to the end, but there was also, you know, some backstabbing and betrayal. So say she owns her game and she sells it well. Honestly, is there a chance for her against Dave?
There's a chance. I might have considered her vote, because if she gets to a second final tribal council, has an identity, like she has things over Dave. If she actually owns those perfectly and articulates them, then she does have things over Dave. So I would have considered it. If she does really well at tribal and he does poorly, I would have probably given her my vote. Some other people, I think, were a little bit cemented. It just really depends, because it's like someone like Lockie goes probably for the simpler stuff. Like he's just had the better resume, like, and that's kind of it. Whereas other people were more irked by specific things, and those specific things you could have talked around, like AK's mm-hmm. thing, you could have potentially talked around. So I think she definitely had a chance, but it, like you said, she was running uphill, definitely.
Yeah, well, AK did show on Instagram that the bag, if she had chosen the bag, just had a white rock. So it seems that, you know, she would have got his vote. And, you know, you're saying that if you had voted, you know, if she had articulated parts of her game well and her character well and kind of sold it to you, she could have got your vote. So that's three votes. Like, I mean, I think it's hard, but like, again, maybe. Like, that would have been a crazy outcome, but maybe.
Yeah, but still really hard. Like, yeah, I don't ever want to, like, sort of be in those shoes where you have to have that uphill battle, because it can't have been pleasant to have to try and engage that, not once but twice. Like, I would much rather just be voted out early than get to top two without a resume.
Yeah, it's a tough one. In terms of, like, the other matchups, like Mo versus Sean, where would you have been going and how do you think that would have panned out as someone who saw the whole jury as you did?
For me, I can see it being very close, and it's pretty hard to say which way it would have gone. I think it would have been 5-4 either way. Sean would have had my vote, because I think that they played so similarly, but Sean did more. So Sean obviously went into the game with a potential target on her back. She's come second before. She was much better at the social game. She had way more options. She was much more flexible, which means that, like, there's other scenarios, hypothetical scenarios, where Mo doesn't have the same control, and I don't see her doing very well. Whereas Sean, if she was in trouble all of a sudden, I think she'd be fine. Like, she'd just work out a different way of moving forward. There's a whole bunch of things where I just saw Sean being that level above Mo. On top of that, like, for me, Mo's social game just was quite bad, to be honest. And I don't really want to, like, have, like, any mudslinging going on. But it's just the sort of thing where I think there should have been quite a bit more consideration to the fact that Vakama 5 were almost definitely going to be on the jury and were almost definitely going to be the ones deciding who won.
Yeah.
Because there's 5 out of 9 of us. Like, we have the majority on the jury. So I think there just should have been more consideration by a couple of players to think about, like, the ramifications of upsetting Vakama people.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of Vakama, we've talked a lot about, like, Brooke versus Dave, for example. Do you think that the Vakamas would have had a good chance against Dave, or do you think that just based on the game he played, whoever was sitting next to him, he probably would have won?
I think Dave beats anyone, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Brooke would have had the best shot because she actually did have a very good game. If you look back on, like, all the points we've talked about, having a resume, like, if she makes it to Final Two, it's probably off the back of a record-breaking winning streak. She found an idol. She played well socially. She strategically was in charge for probably the first half of the game. So I think she has huge resume. She has an identity. Like, it's more subtle than someone like Dave, but at least it's quite present.
She'd be the underdog as well, like the last remaining Vakama, which would be a good identity point.
Yeah. And so, like, she had that identity. She has likability. I think she would have done the best out of any player against Dave.
Something I wanted to ask you was, I mean, you were in the spot that Dave was in as a juror in his first season. You were the second juror, but you've also been the last juror. So with that extra time to process a jury villa and see it from the jury bench rather than coming out 24 hours before Final Tribal Council, how do you feel like your role changes as a juror? Because maybe that could kind of paint how people evolve as jurors depending on how long they last in the game.
I think things definitely change in terms of opinion depending on how short or long you go in the game. I think the people that go to jury first are definitely harsher critics compared to the people that are quite late, partly because you become better friends when you get to the end, and also because you spend more time seeing the subtle moves when they're happening very close around you. Like, in season 4, I was probably the biggest defender of the small moves that Baden and Pia made, because I saw them both as this, like, middle of the ground, like, navigator type role where they weren't always in charge, but they were making sure the things that they wanted to happen were happening. So I could see the exact same thing happening in All Stars. Like, I'm probably a harsher critic of Mo and Tarzan, for example, compared to some of the people that were later on with them. Like, Brooke seems to have a much more, like, moderate sort of view of their game place. And, like, Dave as well has been quite supportive of Tarzan, Mo, and Sean. So that definitely changes the way you look at things. I think being one of the first people on the jury, you hear everyone's opinions coming out and you learn a lot as well through that about their individual perspectives on the game. And so it is literally the perfect thing. If you were ever going to play twice and wanted to win the second time, the perfect place to come in the season before is probably where Dave came. Because you literally get the individual perspectives as they come out. You see the way people's opinions change when they mix with other people at the jury villa. It's just such an interesting contrast to when you come, like, third and you have this surprise. Like, I remember coming out in season 4 when I was third and being genuinely surprised that there was quite this strong disparity between Pia and Baden, who I saw as basically equal. And there was this sort of opinion that Pia was somehow ahead of Baden, which I didn't understand. But that's just something that happens when jurors are all getting together talking all the time. Those small differences get sort of height and they increase, which you sort of saw with Dave and Sean as well. Like, the small differences become massive things you have to overcome.
Yeah. Well, you said the best place to be before you go out and win is the second juror. So next time you've got a good shot. But I think this idea of identity is really interesting because, yes, it's about selling something. And I think we've talked for a long time about how you've got to be a salesman at Final Tribal Council and sell yourself. But I think it's really just based on what the whole game is based on, which is awareness. And as much as I think Sean had a lot of really good points to her game, she played the middle for so long, I think that I've always said that's a huge pro in her game, but the con was always jury perception, like awareness of the jury, awareness of herself, and awareness of herself with the jury. And I think that if you don't know your own game, you can't pitch it. You know, if you don't know what makes it good, what makes it bad, how to sell it, what kind of player you are, your role within the dynamics, like it's all about self-awareness to pitch yourself. If you don't have that, you should be penalized for it because that's very important. And then you can't sell it to the jury. And I think that unfortunately for Shan, that's something she's had in both of her seasons. She's done a lot really well, but it's been about kind of perceiving that, being aware of that, and then packaging it all up for the jury. And I think it's hurt her in both her seasons that she couldn't do that.
Yeah, and everything in Survivor is sort of like everything in Survivor is narrative and perceptions. Like, and there is lies and the truth, and the truth isn't what wins you the game. It's perception and narrative, and the truth sort of weighs into those two things. And in All Stars, the narrative was that David was this player that went from sort of being in the middle or the bottom of that Vakama and just pushed himself all the way to being in charge. And that was the perception of almost everyone except for Shan and Mo, was the perception that Dave was that guy who was in charge. And so if you want to get around that, like there's a couple of things you can do. You can just straight up vote him out when other people tell you directly that he's the one in charge. Just get rid of him. Or you can have that identity to actually start creating a perception and a narrative around yourself. So I think that it's like it's a hard thing to beat someone at the end that has such an incredible resume, like winning so much, finding things, taking themselves from the bottom to the top of an alliance. And really, like to me, the best way to get around that is just vote them out. Like if you can, if you get a shot, just take it. But yeah, I think it does sort of like link back into identity. If Shan has a stronger identity as this sort of person that was willing to do anything to sort of get to the end and willing to cut people, willing to undermine things, she has claims to things that David doesn't. Like, for example, the Jackie thing, there's ways of discussing that while hyping Jackie's game, but also making yourself this sort of player that has their own little aspect of it. So it really just depends on, like, you just got to sell yourself and you need something to really make it understandable. And I think that Mo and Shan both lacked that. Sort of that thing to tie everything together.
Yeah, I mean, perception is reality anyway, but like I think even more so when the perception of the jurors are the votes that make up the win. You know, like if Brooke is saying that Dave's going to win, like it's important because that's her perception and it might be others' perception. And it's also important because she's a juror that's actually going to give a vote. Like you say, like it's about perception and narrative, not necessarily truth. But if every juror except Mo and maybe Shan, if she sat on the jury, thinks that Dave is running the show, that is the truth. I mean, it's the only important truth. Like, there's nothing else that matters except for that. The perception of the jurors is what forms the reality, and it's what forms votes for a win. So it's completely crucial.
Exactly. For any future Survivor players, it is about perception. It is not about the truth. The truth doesn't matter. It's all about perception because people are just going to form their own opinion on who to vote for. And is it going to always be fair? No, it's not, because they're human beings and they're going to use their own emotions and their warped view of the game that really just hypes themselves for most people. Like everyone's just going to be the hero of their own story and you need to like link in with that. So you really need to follow that perception. If other people are telling you someone's on top and they're telling you genuinely that you're not going to win, you need to roll with that.
But I don't think it's unfair because it's like, what is the objective truth of a Survivor season? This is something that is made up of people and their very subjective emotions. And as you said, they all come out thinking they're the hero of their own story. So all their truths are different. So I do think that like the amalgamation of all of that and these like combined perspectives to create a winner is maybe the closest version of the truth that the season has, because otherwise, I mean, there isn't like one arbiter saying like, okay, this was the best game. I mean, maybe podcasters are doing that, but we're unimportant. So maybe what it is instead of an objective truth out there being decided by no one, or maybe being decided at best by the edit, and that has its flaws as well, the truth is of the combined perceptions of the players, and that kind of strips them of their own I'm the hero story and makes it less important because it's all in combination with each other. And we kind of get to a consensus, maybe a flawed consensus, but a consensus based on everyone who was there and their feelings about it and their opinion, and that gets as close to the truth of what happened as we can probably get, if that made any sense.
Yes, and to just piggyback one little thing off that, people giving you their vote at Final Tribal Council is the process of them being the hero of the story to letting someone else be the hero of the story. And you need to play into that. People need to feel good about making you the hero of their season. You're the hero of their experience, and you need to make it so that they feel good about that. And it was so easy to feel good about voting for Dave. It was just so easy. Like, it was so easy to say Dave was a better player than me.
Right. And if you're not willing to do that, like, is there other ways other than just like Dave was phenomenal in a less easy setup? Are there other ways to make people feel good about you taking over their story?
Like using like Pierre or Baden, for example.
Yeah.
There's definitely ways, like having that confidence to actually like drive home your points and arguing for yourself is a fantastic way of doing it. And not just like leaning into people's questions and being super apologetic. Like, I guess if you're looking at two things on top of identity and resume, there's likability versus respectability. And either one of them can make you the hero. But respectability is a definite one that you can lean into. I mean, you saw Pia when Dave called her a goat, and she straight up said, like, I'm not a goat, like, and I'm willing to like fight that claim. And that was a part of her speech that got her definitely like part of my vote. And like, it's the sort of thing where she really just stood up for herself, and things like that come into play where you had a perception, and she was able to actually flip the perception for quite a few people purely through articulating the way that she played.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because as much as like everything in life is gray, Survivor's super gray, you know, and like there's 24 perspectives on what happened in the season, and then there's the edit, and then there's every producer on top of that, and then there's the fans who interpret it in their own ways. And by voting for someone to win, And also in what the editor is trying to do, it's trying to like smooth out those edges. You know, very few people, Dave would come close, but very few people are like a perfect player. And you're trying to like sell the best version of that to take out all the gray and to be like black and white. I'm the winner. They're the loser. This is like a binary thing. I'm better. You're worse. Like, I think you're trying to like really sell that thing. And it's very important to kind of take that narrative out of a very subjective experience. To get to being the objective best, being the winner. I think that that probably is a skill. You're working with emotional people who, you know, have been voted out, who have to vote for you to win. I think it's obviously a really difficult task, but I do think the best way to come out of that is with these really definite things to take away that subjectivity of the things you did really well, your identity, the things you can really hold on to in a very vague understanding. You guys aren't watching it back before you vote. And just clinging to that and giving that narrative and really selling that. I think that's a really good point, if people can kind of take anything from that, if they ever get to the point where they're in Final Tribal Council.
Yes. So let's say hypothetical people in the future playing Survivor, you make your way to Final Tribal Council. My advice is have a resume, have at least one thing that you can say that you did and no one else did, just one. And then the rest of it can sort of be little bits and bobs. But also have an identity, have this sort of like, it doesn't have to be a character, but it needs to be a thing that you can say in one sentence and a 10-year-old can understand it. Like, you need to say
the average Survivor viewer.
Like, you, like, literally, like, you look at my season 4 gameplay and I was just the guy who could outlast everyone. Mm-hmm. And like, and that's basically your pitch going into the final thing. It's a quick thing. It's a sentence. 10-year-old would understand it.
In Australian Survivor most of the time. Like the smiling assassin?
Yeah, you can have a nickname, you can have a moniker, you can have a character, but it needs to be very easily understandable, and you need to be able to cross-reference it with the way that you played. It has to be consistent. You can't be wishy-washy with it. So resume, identity, and then you either have to be likable or respectable enough compared to the person next to you. You want to be more likable or more respectable, one of those two.
Yeah.
Take your pick.
Hopefully both. I kind of love this because I think with Nick's podcast, we did almost 2 hours on prep. So we got people ready. If you're ever going on, we've got the prep podcast. This podcast, I feel like we've really gotten into the jury, the final tribal council. So there's 50 days in the middle that people might struggle with. But we got the beginning and we got the end sorted. Hopefully one of our listeners will take those two things, make it through the other 50 days, which is also important, and then win the game one day because of these advice tips we have given.
I hope so. I hope people will like get something out of this.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's so interesting because I, you know, having spoken with Sean about her game, like, it's just like there's no rules in a Survivor jury. It's such a mess. Like, to be voting on a game that you've seen in parts, to be voting in a game where you are the victim, like, it's so emotional. Like, there's so many parts to it. So I think that, yeah, like, to have something super concrete is so important because otherwise it's just, it's a hot mess. Really, it is.
Yeah. And it's like, and you could have played this fantastic game and get to the end and it's not really worth anything because it was just sort of perceived a certain way. Like, it can just completely be people's undoing that play very well 95% of the time.
If you played really well and no one perceived it that way, did you play well?
That's just going to be the debate for the ages, really.
Yeah.
There's actually like a parallel with wrestling that I'll quickly mention, where there's essentially wrestlers that sell a lot of merchandise, are amazing with crowds, get the crowd response. And then there's wrestlers that are amazing technically, like they're very skilled. They do the moves safely. They protect their opponent. Which one is the better wrestler? Is it the guy that makes money and has the crowd behind him? Or is it the guy who's technically very gifted? And I think the same thing can be said for Survivor. Like, is the better player the one that pulls votes, or is the better player the one that has all the moves, the one that can get through the game the best?
Yeah, this is actually it's a completely different analogy, but I was recently having a discussion with my husband's family about, like, what is a good movie? One that gets good critic scores or one that, like, you like and maybe a fan likes, but, like, is that important? Like, I think that those two things, I don't know if the jurors are the fans or the critics.
Yeah, that's maybe a better parallel, like audience response or critical response. Like, what is more important? And that plays in Survivor. Like, is it, like, flashy or is it good, or, like, what's going to get you the votes?
Yeah, I think that it is really interesting. I'm not sure if, like, the jurors are the critics or the audience, but they're also, like, they're flawed critics because they're, like, personally offended by this. I was actually yesterday reading a review of a show that I watched, and then, like, it was a really bad review, even though I liked the show. And then it came out that the reviewer was, like, ex-friends with the person who had, like, written the subject matter, and I was like, oh, she hates this woman. And, like, it's a really bitter review. Like, I feel like this woman should not have been allowed to review this product because she's so personally connected to it. And that is what Survivor jury is. Like, they're all these people who hate the product, these two people sitting at the final tribal council or have the huge capacity to do so, who are being asked to make what should be an objective decision of who played the best game, but it's not objective, and that's also the beauty of it. You know, that's why we're watching, that's why it's interesting. We didn't just get 10 people to sit down, watch the tapes, and choose the best person, because that would be a really boring and bad game.
And that's why you got to be certain of things. You got to be consistent and you got to have concrete things, because you just want to take that subjectability out of it. Just see if you can completely remove it. Just remove it by having that resume, having that consistency, having something that you can respectably say was better than the person next to you. Or if you don't have that good a game, take someone terrible to the end. Doesn't matter. Any way you can win, that's a win.
Yeah, super interesting stuff here. I do think it's going to help someone win the game one day. Maybe
I can give someone else $500,000.
Yeah, or maybe it'll just help someone pick a movie tonight based on what they think is important. I'm not super sure, but this is so interesting, Harry. I've really liked the different way that we've gone with it and all the discussions we've had around the jury and your game. Is there anything else that you wanted to add from your unique perspective as a two-time juror?
I guess just as someone sort of signing off and who's played a lot of Days of Survivor, if anyone does go out there and get on the game, just have fun with it. Like, try not to take it too seriously, because we've sort of seen a little bit of that on All Stars, and I think the best way to approach it is just have fun.
Yeah, well, I think this is kind of wrapping up a lot of my All-Star coverage, because I know I said we do a deep dive with AK. There's some logistic issues around that. I know we've done a deep dive on Brink of Reality. I wanted to do an extended X interview as well, but I'm not sure when all of that will be able to happen contract-wise or anything like that. So yeah, for
it's,
now,
it's funny because I know the exact logistical problem.
Yeah, it's a headache. It really is a headache. So I don't know what's happening with that. So this might be my last deep dive or All-Stars content for a while. Australian Survivor content for a while, which is a little bit crazy. Thank you for everyone who's followed along. We also obviously have Shawnee, Sean, Nick, and Dave in the deep dive series so far. So I hope everyone's checked that out. Harry, where can people find you and what you're doing and what you're talking about online?
If people want to follow me on Instagram, it's Harry, the ice cream guy is what you look up. And you can see me making stuff. I'm going to be making more ice cream on Instagram, and hopefully soon I'll be back in the actual cooled creamery making some proper stuff as well.
Golden God ice cream. Remember that I need a cut of that, those profits.
Wait, Survivor themed ice creams is where we're going next.
I love it. Can you deliver to Melbourne?
Not to Melbourne. To the rest of Perth, we can deliver.
Okay, I will. When the lockdown is over, I will fly several hours to get ice cream. Survivor themed ice cream is like, that's a lot of things I love in one go. So that's important to me.
Yeah.
But you guys can follow me at Shannon Gates on Instagram and Twitter, where I'm posting all this content. Subscribe to the International Survivor Hap Ups feed. Continuing content on US Survivor, Survivor Global. We had Verna from Survivor South Africa this week. Next week, we have Tessa O'Halloran, who actually is the person that I go through Hogwarts houses with. So a lot of this identity stuff is really informed with her, because I think that's a pretty good way of thinking about identity. And we're definitely going to be sorting the US Survivor contestants into Hogwarts houses as well. So
that sounds interesting.
Yeah, no, it really is interesting. Like, we do that every podcast with Tessa, and it's always like a fun activity that ends up getting more insights that it has any right
to do. She wore the Hogwarts hat when she played as well, didn't she?
Yeah, Ravenclaw. We're both Ravenclaws. Mm. Ravenclaws are the kind of people who care about this thing.
Ravenclaws are the like nerds, aren't they? Like the smarty pants.
Well,
love it.
Yeah, nerds is definitely where I was going with it. That's why I'm
Well, I'm a Slytherin, so I have to say that.
Yeah, that seems obvious. I mean, you guys were literally categorized as snakes.
As
the beginning.
The snakes.
Like, it's perfect. I think a Survivor Hogwarts house season, like, I can't believe it hasn't happened yet, and I actually think it would be pretty fun and actually would say things about people.
Mm.
You didn't like it, but we'll go with Survivor ice cream flavors. That's another theme we could be going. Chocolate versus vanilla.
Future Australian Survivor themes. We've got Hogwarts houses, ice cream flavors, just all sorts of random stuff.
Vanilla will be the people who play down the line, and then chocolate will be people who do crazy things. I don't know what caramel would be, but anyway, now I'm just hungry from talking. I'm going to go.
All right, go get some ice cream, Shannon.
Thank you so much, Harry, for chatting with me. And I think these insights were really cool, and I hope everyone enjoyed it.
Yeah, no problem. Hope people get something out of it. And thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely. Other than just like hunger pains, which they definitely will. Yeah. As well. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening as always. Hope you checked out all of the other content. I don't know when I'll see you again on the Australian Survivor coverage, but keep an eye on the feed. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And thank you, Harry. I guess that's it. I will see you next time, whenever that may be.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe heroes versus villains in like 5 years to 10 years.
I look forward to it. Thanks so much, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.